Hey guys, and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast episode number 90. This is our next Shaken Not Stirred episode where we examine the movie Thunderball, the fourth installment of the James Bond franchise featuring Mr. Sean Connery. Couple of quick things. There was a small audio hookup during the process, so you might notice that we changed topics a little bit abruptly, but it's no big deal. I hope you guys don't even notice that, which you will, of course, now that I mentioned it. Anyway, quick items of business before we get going here. Head over to iTunes. Subscribe, rate us. We want those 5 stars. That'd be really helpful. If you want to leave a review, even better. But if not, that's okay. Just a rating would be great. On Twitter, we are at the number 3 Drinks In Pod. That's at 3 Drinks In Pod. We are on Instagram, Facebook, and questions, concerns, comments, complaints, and possible advertisers can contact us at 3DrinksInPodcast@gmail.com. That's about everything. Okay, here we go.
It's too bad that people won't get to hear about your amazing sock issues.
Left
maybe
the right,
new socks,
man.
Let's just say.
It wasn't issues so much. It was just,
they make left and right socks now, everybody. Sock technology has come a long way. Yeah.
So we were wrong about Connery. We said that he made 5 movies for Eon and then 1 for whoever the hell made Never Say Never Again. But they also he came back and did Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah, I think I said that before I got cut off.
Unceremoniously.
Yeah, he came back, but they paid him a small island. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, which, you know, he lives on quite happily now in his, his lack of hair.
He's quite happy now.
Which, I mean, like the thing I was saying before we got cut off that I found so interesting, and this, I think, speaks to a lot of the complaints I have about this particular movie, is that between 1962 and 1967, he made 5 movies. That's a movie a year, for Christ's sake. That's amazing. You know, now
all,
it takes
all
us...
Bond movies?
Well, he made Dr. No, From Russia With Love, Goldfinger, Thunderball, and You Only Live Twice in 5 years.
Yeah, no wonder he was tired.
Yeah. I mean, Jesus. And, I mean, now we complain, it takes, 3 or 4 years to get a Bond movie made. Well, they're much better now.
Yeah.
I mean, just movies in general are made better. And you can say what you want about, old movies being great. And some of these movies are great. And, nostalgia makes up for a lot of the things that are lacking because there are so many things that are lacking because they just are made better now. Mm-hmm. And we'll go into some of the things that we noticed were not as well put together as we would have liked. But, Jesus.
Hachi machi.
So, all right. So, first up on the list of things to review, I'll read out the list, then we'll go through each one of them more or less. The pre-title sequence, the song, the title graphics, the villain, the henchman, the girl, the gadgets, the car, the watch, the tuxedo, the fights, the deaths, and the plot in and of itself.
So, I think I said this joke last time. So, the movie.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. But those specific things we're going to pay specific attention to. So the pre-title sequence, what did you think of the pre-title sequence?
It was good. Actually, I like this one. I thought it was more interesting than the others.
It's a bit ridiculous because he's got that jetpack.
Oh, that's right. I was like, why? Oh, the jetpack, yes. Yeah. Apparently that was a real army thing.
Like, well, that's why he had the helmet on, I think.
Yeah, because the stuntman had to have the helmet on.
Right. It was one of those things. I'm looking at this going, okay, there are 19 things that are bothering me about this particular sequence. And, like, the kind of overexcitement that people had about, ooh, it's a jetpack in 1967 or 65. Mm-hmm. And, like, this obsession we had with all these, you know, German engineers and then Russian engineers building super weapons to make their soldiers more invincible. And it was just this, like, flimsy piece of tinfoil that... But it worked. You're right. Like, it was an actual jetpack. It actually did shoot this guy across a football field or whatever. Mm-hmm. But because it was... Like, where did it come from?
Right. Who put it there so he could escape with it?
It was sort of this, like, very delicate and large piece of equipment that was just sitting on the top of a chateau in France.
Yeah.
That he could then access following a fight with this guy.
And then he didn't really go very far.
He got to his car.
Yeah.
That was the important part. He got to the car.
But they had to, like, stop and put it in the trunk. You know, like, they couldn't leave it there.
It's very important. They just, the Q wanted it back really badly.
Yeah, so I think like the amount of time it would have taken to just run to the car is the same amount taken to like fly over the wall and then like unstrap it carefully and fold it carefully and
put it in the trunk.
Put it in the Aston Martin.
And I'm thinking about that, you know, the scene in Spectre where he's being chased in Rome by Dave Bautista. He's driving that, you know, $100 million prototype Aston Martin, which he promptly destroys by crashing it into the Tiber River. Mm-hmm. Didn't care much about that, but here he is very gingerly putting away the jetpack.
Yeah. Can't let the bad guys have it. But, I mean, I like that Sean Connery is a lot like Daniel Craig in that way, in that he's totally brutal and violent if he has to be. He beats the crap out of that guy.
Oh yeah, the fight scene at the end too. He was really that was vicious. You know, that's what made him great, because he was both charming and terrifying all at the same time. And you have to be both, I think, to nail this.
Yeah, it was a nice, you know, way of showing Bond as a vengeful kind of angry person.
Yeah,
you know, and he was.
It's more complicated than just this is my job, or I like to get laid.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of person would do this sort of thing? Well, listen, Bond is this kind of guy.
Yeah. So, and then Mr. Tom Jones singing the theme.
This is when they got harder to justify putting the title of the movie into the song.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, I guess we got to do what the other movies did, because now this is the fourth one. So it's like, what's it called? Thunderball. Uh-huh. And what is that exactly? I don't know. Okay.
And what is that? Yeah. It's true. The word really means nothing.
I was reading it means that when a nuclear bomb explodes and you get the mushroom cloud, the thunderball is like part of that explosion. The sound it makes, the ball-shaped cloud, it's a thunderball.
Oh.
So that's what it would have happened if they'd blown up the thing in Miami with a nuclear, like, okay.
All right.
But that's not well known. Like, I had to look it up.
Yeah.
You know,
so. Yeah, that wasn't, it was not obvious to me.
You know, so this, but they felt that, you know, they had to put Thunderball in the title. So he's screaming about, I'm coming at you like Thunderball. I'm like, it's not like a Thunderball.
Yeah, like Thunderball's a thing everyone knows.
Yeah.
You know. Right.
It was okay.
Yeah. I mean,
Tom Jones was really popular back then.
He was really popular. He's got a very strong voice. I don't think we make fun of him a lot because he's really cheesy.
It's Tom Jones.
But, you know, that's some set of pipes you have there, Mr. Jones. Well done. So, all right, title graphics were just more naked ladies and, you know, silhouettes and
swimming. If you couldn't get the theme.
Right, yeah. Water was a big part of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh,
kind
yes.
of a too big a part. So, So yeah, so then we get into some of the more nitty-gritty stuff. The villain, the henchman, the girl. I don't know. I felt that I didn't like this movie. Did you like this movie?
It was okay. This movie I felt was starting to seep into cheesy territory, but still trying to hold on to realistic. So the guy who directed this one directed From Russia with Love, which was a far more realistic, you know, quote realistic Bond film. He was just after some device. And this one too. I'm trying to figure out what's going on and stop them. You know, there was a little bit of a detective work.
Actually, wait, in this one or in that one?
In this one.
There was no detective work. They told you what happened.
You know, but Bond doesn't know. He's trying to figure out what they're doing on Nassau.
I mean, I don't know. I felt that there was a lot more detective work going on in From Russia with Love than this one, because A, they call them on the phone and tell them, unless you give us $1 million, we're going to blow up a city. So with From Russia with Love, you kind of know what they're doing with the Lecter or whatever, but like their specific plans in the grand scheme are somewhat obscured. And you don't really, and Spectre is playing sides with the Russians and MI6 in that one. Here, it's very well splayed out for everyone to see. These are who these people are. This is what we're doing. There wasn't a lot of mystery. There was none for the audience, and very little for Bond as compared to previous.
Well, that's why it's really struggling to be like a cheesy Bond film versus sort of realistic, because worldwide villainy doesn't have guys named Number One, Number Two, with the cat and the chair and the giant map, you know? So it was like, we're starting to get into weirdo territory, but we're still trying to be realistic. I'm like, and made for things that were kind of boring. A lot of boring scenes.
I mean, like, a lot of big committee meetings, you know, everyone's...
Yeah.
I mean, and like all the different tropes that Austin Powers stole came from this movie. I mean, yeah, they were expanded upon in subsequent films, but a lot of them came from this one. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy with the chair that drops him. I figured out who you are. Number Nine, it's you. And he hits a button. Yeah. And then
his like body disappears down a hole.
And they all start sweating.
Yeah.
All this flap sweat. Just
and number two, and has the eye patch.
Yeah. So, let me take a look at some of the notes I have for this one. So, yeah, where did that jetpack come from? Okay, the spine stretching machine.
I don't understand that.
Like, there were a lot of bizarre medical devices that people used to, you know, like that whole fat jiggling thing where you'd stand there and this giant band would shake you and you're supposed to lose weight. But why would there be a death setting on the spine stretching machine? We're going to crank it up to 11. Like, but if that's not safe at all, why would it be there?
Who turned it on that high?
That was that whole beginning was kind of confusing. There was the guy with his face bandaged who was the guy they altered to look like the pilot. And there was another guy, I guess, who was like his handler who was there, who he traps in the sauna box.
Is that
also
who that was?
I think so. I think he worked for them, so he knew.
Right.
I don't know. And that was never made clear, and they didn't get back to it either. If we saw that guy again, it was...
Yeah.
It escaped my attention.
Very terribly edited.
Yeah.
Like in 1 minute, he's like, oh, I'm almost dead on this machine. And then the next minute, it's like dinner time. And then the next minute, he's like trapping that guy in the sauna, in the Schwitz. You know?
Yeah, at some point, and I don't think I wrote this down, but I remember going like, how much time has just passed here?
Yeah.
It seemed like a long stretch of time happened over like maybe 2 minutes worth of the movie. I went, wait, oh no, it was later when we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but this is, it bothered me and I couldn't figure out what was wrong with it. It was the editing. When, towards like the middle of the film, Largo invites him, oh, come take Domino, my girlfriend, for some reason, out to, the Mardi Gras thing. And then, like, that whole chase scene happens where people are shooting at each other and this whole business. And then he finds... And then he
terribly edited scene.
It's not even that. And then he meets up with the bad girl, like the girl villain, and he meets her up in the tub, and there's like this whole they do it, and he puts on a suit, and the guys come to say, well, we're gonna kidnap you now, and then they go back. Then they go back to the party. He did all of that, and the party's still going on. That's a whole evening for me. Mm-hmm. You know, getting dressed up, going out at night, you know, running around in some kind of a chase, getting, you know, meeting up with this girl. Oh, and then the whole thing where he's like, oh, my boat capsized. I'm totally dry. And my boat capsized. It's like there's this whole thing in the middle of the movie where time is just a plaything. It's just dark there a lot. Mm-hmm. So it just needed to be dark. So all this stuff had to happen, even though it couldn't take place over that length of time. It was like watching 24.
Yeah,
you know, they compressed time awkwardly because of the edit in the middle of the movie. I'm not doing a great job of explaining it, but there's things that are missing in this story that they just kind of bowled through because nobody was really paying attention, I don't think. Mm-hmm. So anyway. Other notes I have include actual starfish poaching. Did you catch that?
Yeah. She stole a starfish.
She's poaching starfish. We have our upgraded Felix, now more handsome.
I wrote that too. Like, new Felix, question mark? Like, why switch Felix? Like, now he's tall, dark, and handsome versus, like, the schlubby guy with a hat, you know?
And he got schlubbier, I think, between the first... Like, wasn't he kind of schlubby in the first one? And then, like, by Goldfinger, he was kind of a doofus.
Yeah.
But, like, not like Joe Don Baker level of doofus, but pretty doofusy.
Like, his character was always all over the place because they always vacillate between making America like a bunch of dummies and making America like this overwhelming military force.
Right.
Which is what happens at the end of this movie, where he shows up with like the Coast Guard or whoever, and all the guys like jump into the sea to fight the Spectre agents underwater with blowguns. Like, one minute he's an idiot, like, oh, where's Bond now? I don't know. Yeah. Next minute it's like calling the Navy and they just bomb the shit out of everything.
I like the guy who plays him in the Daniel Craig movies. I can't think of his name. Jeffrey something, I think, maybe.
Well, I like the idea because he's like Bond's equal, only he's American.
Well, but he also doesn't look... He reminds me of the original Felix in that he's not super tall and, you know, buff and, you know, and he's a handsome guy. But he's not Daniel Craig. He's just a guy. But he's still cool. Like, he's still kind of badass. And
he
was the best part of...
Yeah,
he was the best part of Quantum of Solace, where he's like, they meet in the bar. He's like, you got about 30 seconds to get out of here. That kind of cool, badass, was that understated kind of guy.
Was there a best part of that movie? I think it's when it ended.
Yeah. No. Anyway. Did you have notes?
For the beginning of that, I like how
that
death machine that he's on, it stretches his back and they crank it up to 11 and he's like, oh, I'm going to die. And then the girl comes in, like the masseuse is like, oh my God, Mr. Bond, I'm so sorry. Like, please don't tell anybody this happened. He goes, well, you know, I know how to keep my lips shut for a price. And then he has sex with her. I'm like, what the fuck just happened?
He just blackmailed her into
sex? Is that what happened? Am I just watching that?
Yeah.
That's the shit they're talking about when they make jokes about Bond.
It was a different time.
Yeah. You could do that back then, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Haven't you seen Mad Men? That's totally normal.
Yeah, we're such Mad Men.
We are Mad Men.
So what I really like... So that was the whole... That whole part of the movie is like where I saw the... struggling to figure out evil plans versus actual spy methods. So they have that guy who's a pilot and they're replacing him with their own guy who's getting plastic surgery and pilot lessons, and he's going to pilot the plane so they can steal these nuclear weapons. You know, and it's this big scheme. We're going to replace the pilot. And even the pilot's like, I want more money. I had vocal training. I had my face changed, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, that's fine. And they go to insane lengths to like to do that. But then they also take the original pilot and put him back. And they're like, oh, he died from a heart attack. When they could have just wiped him off the map. Like, they're trying to do this bizarre cover up. You know?
Yeah.
So they get caught sneaking the dead body back into the place of the original pilot. That's where Bond catches them.
Right, which is why he knows that this whole thing is going on.
Right. I mean, Bond just happens to be at that spa.
Yeah.
Which starts the movie.
Happy coincidence, I guess.
Right.
But, like, so. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I guess if they hadn't done that, if they just left him alone.
Right. Who's
they'd have
know?
Been fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they,
this was
they
a pretty stupid
out.
Movie.
Yeah, and this one wasn't one of the better ones, which is weird to say, because you would expect, like, you know, A View to a Kill or something to be bad, which it might be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. But no, there I was mean, all...
And also, you know, that handler that you mentioned that was with the fake pilot?
Yeah.
And they, like, number one says something like, This is the goofy shit where it's like, well, we should have chosen a better handler. Send out the contact the execution branch. So the handler, he's going to kill Bond, and they just kill the handler instead.
Yeah, they're very formal. That's like this really funny thing that it's run like a, you know, like an evil corporation where they have this and that, and it's, you know, like. You imagine they have like a guy who works in accounting, mm-hmm. and yeah. you know, like somebody
keeping
that
ledgers,
yeah, somebody that handles all the office supplies,
yeah,
you know, and everyone's chair has like, you know, a trap door underneath it that at any minute they could get killed, but the benefits are really good, and you know, it's very convenient parking. It's like all these sort of very banal things they have about this evil empire they're trying to run.
Well, I always think of that Simpsons where he's working for Scorpio. And he's like, my team is way ahead of the German warfare division.
German.
A weather machine, you know, stupid crap.
Is that's really, I mean, it's funny. Like this movie really, I mean, I think Goldfinger sort of established all the cool stuff that they could do with the character. Like Dr. No sets up this, you know, this is a little bit, you know, over the top and bizarre. And, you know, their plans are kind of extreme and, the locations are exotic, and you know it kind of hints at a deeper, darker conspiracy, and then that's continued in from Russia with Love. I keep doing that, and then Goldfinger just starts to tip the edge of the cool stuff Bond can do. It's not just the world that they're living in, but they have, you know, exploding pens and cars that do cool things with ejector seats and what have you. And here it sort of takes that, you know, hinted at universe that they get to in the first two movies with as far as like who the villains are and what their goals are, and makes it really straightforward and kind of banal in a way. Like it's not that exciting. They're just holding their world for ransom, which is a big deal, but it's just about money. And it's, I mean, I guess maybe that was the, you know, if the concern is, in 1965 is, you know, nuclear annihilation, then yeah, okay, that's going to play very well to your audience to have like rogue people running around with bombs. But like all they talk about in that board meeting is, we made this much money from that and that much money from this, and like, so what? Like, what's your, it's, if this is just about, you know, the dollars and cents, it seems a little bit.
Well, that's what I think they were trying to show that, you know, there's more than, there's all these bad things are happening, yes, but there's one really big one that's not, it's not Russia all the time. It's not a state actor. It's just a bunch of bad people doing lots of bad things, which is what I like Goldfinger for, because in Goldfinger, it's just one guy by himself who owns a company where he likes gold and tries to embezzle it everywhere he goes.
Right.
Whereas, like, this is why I didn't like the Spectre, the newer Bond movie, where it's like, we don't need to have one mastermind mustache twirling villain for these things. It's better if Bond has to go around, because there's lots of bad people whose, you know, their interests don't align. And in this one, it's when you really start to see like henchmen wearing black, and they're just like coming out of the woodwork. Who are these people? Where are they getting them from? Why a non-nation state group just finding random people? Like, I'm not surprised number nine was embezzling funds. Like, there should be more conflict here, you know?
Yeah,
it's more fantastical. It's not believable, so it seems goofy.
Yeah, that's really what I mean. And you're right that it continues up to Spectre with Daniel Craig, and that was the weakest part of that movie. Was like, they're in this. I mean, that they connected all the villains to him in the previous Craig movies. It's not the stupidest idea in the world, but it's not the best either. But the that room full of millennials clacking away at the computers.
Yeah.
Like, where did you get the? I mean, I understand you get a couple of toughs.
Yeah.
You know, like a couple of guys that were just to serve as henchmen. There's plenty of bad people on the planet. I mean, yeah, okay, fine. But, you know, a mercenary, you know, some kind of crazy ex-military guy who's got no conscience, I buy. But a bunch of, like, you know, nerdy kids that you kind of seduce into moving to the desert in the middle of Africa to work in your, you know, super weird lair like that.
Yeah.
I mean, were they all kidnapped? I believe that. Like, tell me that story. That was, sure. I don't know. Anyway.
So this, but you're right. Had that
this is where thing. Yeah, it gets kind of off the rails.
You know. And so when we were talking about, I don't know, gadgets are on there, this is when they start to fuse unnecessary gizmos and gadgets onto the movie too. So in the last movie, Goldfinger has like the map of Fort Knox on the ground that like comes out of the floor. I'm like, ooh, cool. And this one, I wrote it down. I'm like, why would they do that? When they're giving the briefing to all the 00s, and they're in that like stately room, you know, where it's
like giant ceilings.
Giant ceilings and big tapestries on the wall. They're like, okay, we've lost this plane. It had the nuclear bombs on it. Here's where it might have gone down. And the tapestry comes up off the wall and it reveals this enormous map. And the guy goes, so as you can see here, it would be in this location, but not that location based on radius. Great, thank you. I'm like, wait, what? That's it? That's the whole presentation? Why put this enormous map behind this enormous tapestry for 30 seconds? It was so unnecessary. They already had dossiers you had to open like the SATs. You know, do not open until I tell you. Just put the map in there.
Yeah, they did. That was... I mean, it reminded me a little bit of Dr. Strangelove, just this giant room with all this stuff in it. You can't invite it in here.
But, like, are they holding, like, state dinners there in the meantime? And, like, quick, throw this in front of the map so no one knows it's here.
It's the ballroom of a small country club. They have weddings there on weekends.
Yeah, you know. Sweet, super sweet 16s. It's a whole thing.
Christ.
So, some gadgets from Q were, I think, were okay. They were more necessary, but stuff like that was just
well,
stupid.
he didn't use, like, they gave him that watch, which, you know, as a bit of a watch aficionado, you can Google this. Some people are nuts about this stuff, and they have all kinds of blogs and websites devoted to it. And I looked at it, I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. He never uses it. Ever.
That's the one with the, has the Geiger counter on it, right?
Right. Did he ever use the... I mean, he used it on the camera, or he gave it to the girl to use on the camera.
He only used it when he was underwater at night, because he thought maybe they were on the boat. And at one point, he goes like this to hear it tick. And that's like, if you, it's blinking, you miss it.
Yeah, it was really quick. Because, yeah, I mean, like, what was funny about it was, A, he has two watches in the movie.
Yeah, like now he had another one.
Yeah, when he gets out of the water, he has a Rolex Submariner. That one's a Breitling. And if you look at it, there's no way to adjust it. It's it's totally encased.
Like a clasp or a piece of metal or something, like a bracelet would be.
Yeah. Fun fact about that watch, that actual prop, somebody bought it at in England at what's called a car boot sale. Mm-hmm. It's like a yard sale where people all show up and they open up the back of their car, the boot, the trunk, and they sell shit out of the back of their car. So rather than like having everyone come to your house for a yard sale, you put things in your car, you drive to one location, like a flea market, I guess, that's kind of makeshift, you do it yourself. Somebody bought it for £25 out of the back of someone's car. Wow. And it's being sold. It was sold for like £60,000. So, yeah, fun fact. Yeah.
Fun fact for them.
But like and it's a real Breitling watch. It's a, you know, it's not just a junky prop. It was a real watch.
Sure.
Yeah, but that, what's that?
I said, yeah, sure. No.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Anyways, what else did I have in my notes? I had boats capsize, I'm dry. Yeah, the night of Mardi Gras seems to take forever. Like, they go, he has like three costume changes in the span of, you know, 15 minutes worth of film. And it mm-hmm. just seems to be like that would have been hours. He had sex in that time, you know? They took a shower and then he put on a new suit. Yeah, but meanwhile, he left her at like the dais back at the parade.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess like, she wears the Spectre ring. Like, why would you do that?
And it's like, it's huge, too. It's like the size of a plum.
Yeah.
You know, it's this at least in the movie, it just looks like a regular, you know, it's a singular band with a little, the octopus. Symbol, yeah. which was worn like on the inside of the hand, so you didn't see it. Yeah. And the whole point is you hold your hand up, like, look at me, I'm important, and they go, oh, I'm sorry. But
yeah, hers was like a decoder ring.
Yeah, I mean, he had one too. Like, they're just, it's just not subtle, you know. And for like a super secret, you know, organization, they're out there throwing money around like it's someone's business.
I also. It's just so dated. I mean, I don't know how many people play Baccarat in the 1960s, but I have no idea how that game is played. And it comes up in like every early movie. And I'm sitting there like Ted Mosby in How I Met Your Mother when Barney's playing that game in the casino. I'm like, oh, yep, that's it. He must be winning. Oh, wait, he lost. Okay. Sure. And hit him again. Is that the term?
I'm pretty sure that I mean, this is from what I could glean from watching these movies. Was that it works similarly to blackjack, except that the face cards are worth nothing. You need to get, like, the most you could get in a hand is 9. Mm. And so you draw a couple cards at a time, and I'm not quite sure how the betting structure works. But yeah, it is kind of dated. And it just, that scene was weird because he walks over, he wins all this money, and then he goes, I'm going to go take your girl for a drink. And then they leave, and then they go dancing. Which I don't know if you watch the dancing scene. They're not. There's no music. There's like a dance floor.
Yeah.
But what you're hearing is like the score of the film.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're just, and you can see
baby
that
Baby Driver.
Yeah, right. And like, you can see everyone around them. Like, no one's moving to any rhythm at all. They're just kind of hobbling around like an eighth grade dance. Mm-hmm. It was really funny and kind of obvious. Like, wow, they just were told, okay, you're all dancing. You're at a party. Be dancing.
I think it goes to one of the movie's biggest flaws was, once again, terrible dubbing. The dubbing was terrible. You could actually see certain points where Bond is speaking and nothing is coming out of his mouth.
Yeah.
I thought it was my computer. I'm like, what's wrong with this? You know, they dubbed the woman who was a bad guy. They dubbed number two. He was clearly dubbed. You know, it was terrible. I was like, why can't they get this right? Yeah. It's the 60s. It wasn't that bad.
What do you think of the character of Largo as a bad guy?
I don't know. I thought he started... I don't understand if he was that high up. I mean, he's number two, for God's sakes. Yeah, he's right below number one.
You're this close.
You're this close. Why is he doing all that stuff? Like, why is he going underwater and doing and moving? I thought he'd have more henchmen. I mean, he had a lot
hands
already.
On.
Yeah, exactly. It's like they wouldn't send the captain on these away missions in Star Trek, but, you know.
Well, if you want something done right, but he wanted nothing done right. He just didn't seem to want to succeed at this. Like, he was just bad at it.
Yeah,
you know, like,
all the stuff that was supposed to be goofy Bond movie was horrible. You know, I have the lair with the sharks without the guardrails around it, and I throw people in my shark pit when they don't do well. Like, okay, that's fucking stupid, but all right.
I mean, you know, I guess back then nobody had, you know, back in 1965, your average American or British guy didn't have a shark pit like we do now. So we're not used to people having shark pits.
You know, it's like the GPS. I have my own GPS. I have my own shark pits.
You know, all these things that seemed exotic back then are totally normal now.
I have my own boat that separates into another boat.
I literally was not paying attention, and I went, wait, what happened? And, like, I totally blanked off on that one. Like, where do you get that boat from? Like, I was so confused for a minute.
I like how the leftover boat had, like, machine guns on it, and they were like, I guess we'll just keep firing at people until they get blown up. It's like, wow, that is some loyalty.
Make you less stand, yeah.
Yeah. Because it's not like that boat had engines, so it's just going to float there and fire away.
Seriously.
But, like, all that stuff. So I have the evil lair, and I have evil henchmen who wear black skull caps. And they did the back and forth with Bond, where it's send a guy to kill him. Oh, they didn't do it. Let's have dinner instead. Well, this next guy didn't kill him, so invite him over to have sex with my girlfriend. And
that's what he did. He was literally throwing his woman at him and then getting mad.
And then getting mad about it. Like, that part I thought sucked. Like, all that middle stuff that happened when they was trying to investigate. Because you can't seriously investigate a goofy premise like that.
Yeah.
You know? He's walking around with the cigarettes and the eye patch. And he's clearly evil. I mean, you know, even by 1965 standards.
Yeah.
So, I didn't like him as a villain.
Yeah, he was very inept. You know, just really not, the girl henchman was kind of more interesting. But not much more interesting.
Well, they didn't give her a lot to do. So she killed the handler in the beginning with the motorcycle, you know, and then she throws the motorcycle into the lake and it just sinks. But, like, Bond never follows up on that. So then she doesn't come back for, like, an hour. Like, she's not in the film for a long time.
She's just not there. And then she shows up and, like, they have sex and she thinks she has the upper hand and she doesn't. And, you know, that line was delivered really well when she gets killed.
Oh, wait, can she sit here?
No, can she sit here? She's just dead.
She's just dead. There were a lot of good one-liners.
Yeah, like, I mean, they were
off.
Yeah, it wasn't like it was really good writing. It was just he just delivered them really, really well.
Yeah, he nails that guy to the tree with the bow gun. It's like, oh, I think he got the point. Yes. You know, Pierce Brosnan can't say that.
No, I mean, the thing about Connery was that it was so subtle in some ways. Like, I think he got the point. Like, it was like he was saying it to himself. And that's when those lines work, is if he's not, like, mugging for the camera when he does it, it works. If it's just kind of like a thing, like, I'm trying to be funny about this, because it almost conveys, like, a, you know, an insane personality thing. Like, I just killed a guy without thinking about it. I should make a small joke to myself just so I don't go insane.
Right.
Kind of
thing. It's like a coping mechanism.
Exactly.
For him. Yeah.
I mean, which, that's reading a lot into it. But
So it makes it good.
Yeah. There was no car in this one besides the DB5 in the beginning, right?
No. I mean, it still had all the gizmos.
Yeah.
But when it was so much underwater, you know, he's on an island, so he didn't really need the car.
Well, the underwater thing was just... So, I started watching this after I had a very long day. We had some, like, issues at my house, and I had guys working on the house, and I was all stressed out because it was costing me a fortune. And so I sat down to watch the movie, you know, after everyone went to bed. And I'm not sure if I'm just, like, not paying attention or if I'm just, like, bored, or if it's, and so it's a little bit of both. So I turned it back on today to watch the last half an hour, which is mostly the underwater fighting.
Yeah. Which mostly. Was, oh my God. It's like another movie.
It's the longest half an hour of my life. And so these are some of my notes I have. You know, why does Largo have to go with them underwater?
Right. And
why is the Coast Guard attack posture in the harpoon fight like the Redcoats at Yorktown? They all kind of like, okay, guys, bunch together so no matter what they do, they can't miss us.
Yeah.
And then Bond gets in there and he has his own underwater jetpack now that shoots green slime out the back of it for some reason.
Yeah.
And
you know. It was in Q's laboratory. He was messing with it. Did you notice that?
Is that what that was?
Yeah, so he was like leaning on something and like playing with it. And
remember that,
like,
yeah.
Don't touch that. It was that thing.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was a jetpack / harpoon gun, but.
Yeah. And then at some point, like, he's doing that, and they cut back to, like, the fight. So Bond comes in, and he's going to go zoom this way to get the thing he has to do. And then, like, they cut back to the fight, like, a minute later, and it's just 10 guys spitting oddly in the water. And I just wrote, "It was a madhouse." That was my note for that. I was just, it was, and then... Yeah. Then my next note just says, "This must have been very, very exciting in 1965."
Because like all you can hear is the dubbing of like somebody's oxygen tank.
Yeah,
like there's some music, but there's no one talking. Like underwater scenes like that are hard to follow. There's no one's talking, and everyone's dressed the same, and you can barely see their eyes. So you have to do a lot of weird cuts to show who's who. So like, every so often, you would see Bond like swim past on his own, and he'd like. As he would go, he would either cut people's oxygen tanks with a knife or, like, rip their masks off so they couldn't see. And, yeah, like, no one was... What?
No, or, yeah.
When nobody was fighting him. Like, he was just swimming through, like, oh, I got you. Don't worry, you know?
Yeah. Helping out. And they're also just really, really slow.
Yeah.
Because you're underwater. It's difficult to move quickly if you're underwater. So, and how much do you want to bet they actually kill those sharks?
I'm sure they ate them after, like, on set.
Well, there was
shooting
no
like, today, everybody.
Yeah, there was no PETA back then. There was no like this shooting. Like they're shooting sharks full of, you know, those harpoons. I they probably would have done that for real.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that happened.
No qualms about that. And what else did I have for that? I had the boats explode when they touch land. That insane, like that. That boat thing, like the fight on the boat in the bridge,
yeah.
Was pretty good, you know, in terms of like, you know, all of a sudden like 9 guys came out of nowhere and one guy had a bottle of champagne for some reason, but that's okay.
And like, I actually wrote at the end of that fight, right before they crash into the thing and explode, Sean Connery's lip is bloody, like, he, you know, it's fake, but he has blood on his face.
Yeah, they and get a few good licks in.
Yeah, this is when, you know, his hair had to look good and all that stuff. I'm like, wow, it actually, they tried to make it look like he was fighting people.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, that was a good fight.
Did you...
The green screen was terrible.
Oh, my God.
It looked like he was going 8,000 miles an hour.
Yeah.
It's like, what is going on?
What kind of super boat is this?
Well, at that point, I didn't know where we were. I'm like, we're off the coast of Miami. So, like... By now, we're probably in, you know, Africa. Boats going so fast.
And then that thing at the end with the parachute, did you catch where we've seen that before?
No.
The Dark Knight.
Oh, right.
They do the exact same thing in The Dark Knight. I mean, so they stole it from this, I guess, if not, you know.
Well, that's probably a real thing they do.
Sure, why not?
Mm-hmm.
So that guy's Blofeld, the same guy as they made Dr. Evil look like later on.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a movie where they show that happening? Because that's what happens in Inspector. Is the bomb goes off with the watch, and his eye is damaged, and you imagine that they're going to make him look like that eventually.
No, I don't think they show that.
they go from 0 to 60 with that guy.
Yeah, in Diamonds Are Forever, that guy has a much bigger part.
Yeah.
And like you see him and you see the cat, and then at some point they lose the rights to that character. And so you don't see him anymore till, I don't know, Spectre.
Yeah. We didn't really get into that whole like, but there was a huge court or legal issue with this movie. And because they started developing it with a guy named Kevin McClory, I think his name was. And then they kind of left him in the dust and went to do their own thing. Fleming and Broccoli and Saltzman, and the guy sued and won the rights to some of the characters from this movie and the plot as well. So that's where you got Never Say Never Again in 1983. It was an entirely independent production, not affiliated at all with Eon.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, but there were some people in that, like Q wasn't in it, so there was like, it was... It's like Bond on the, not on the cheap, but like,
you know, missing parts. You know,
yeah, like an incomplete version of it. It's, you know, they were prohibited from doing certain things and bringing in certain characters.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's I've seen it. It's not my favorite. It's not that good.
It's not much more an improvement over this film. So
no, I mean, like it's there's problems with this movie all over the place.
Yeah.
It's execution for what it was in the early 60s, and in the very short span of time they had to make the damn movie. If you think about it, you know, but it's not that interesting. The concept in and of itself, and it might just be that it's dated. And, you know, in the mid-60s, it was a bigger deal to steal a nuclear warhead and then try to ransom the world. That was novel back then. Okay, fine. But it just, you know, this one, it doesn't hold up, I guess, is the long... An hour later, that's what we say. Just doesn't hold up.
Doesn't hold up. Even the henchman wasn't very good in this one. Mr. Vargas. He just is just a guy.
Oh, the weird kind of pedophile guy standing there?
Yeah, he's just some
gets
dude.
Gets shot in the chest with that thing? Yeah, no, he's just... I don't know what the hell that was about.
That's all the notes I have, but anything else?
Yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah. So not their best go. I'm hoping that the next one is better.
Yeah, if I had to rank them, it would be Goldfinger, Russia with Love.
Dr. No.
I guess, yeah.
This is better. This is not as good as Dr. No. Dr. No.
Because Dr. No is kind of boring.
It's kind of boring, but there were cool scenes in Dr. No. There are no cool scenes in this movie. Like this, just there's a kind of a decent fight at the end, and that's it.
Yeah,
you know, like this, like there's I still love that scene where they bring that scientist guy to Dr. No's island, and like you get that disembodied voice telling him what to do, and it's really creepy as hell. Like that set the tone for a lot of these movies. That this was an otherworldly kind of, you know. You know, setting. It's not, you know, this is not a typical spy movie. It's just these bizarre things, and then you know, it's not supposed to be. But it wouldn't have started without that kind of theatrical stuff.
This one had that. Did you catch that scientist they had working with them?
Oh yeah, for like 2 seconds, and then he turns on them at the end. He's like, "Oh no, just who was that guy?"
I don't know. He said something about working in his lab in Warsaw. Was he supposed to be like an ex-Nazi or something?
No, that was totally random.
Yeah, and at the end, he's like, "Oh, don't worry, I'm actually a good guy." And I'm like, "Wait, who are you?"
Yeah, when he takes Domino, who's been kind of tortured with ice and a cigar, the
top notch
mischievous torture device this guy has, a bowl of ice and a cigar and a lit cigar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. I mean, the whole point he was dating her was to get close to the brother, right? Who they replaced because the brother was the pilot.
Yeah, why they didn't just... I mean, I guess he did kill her because he wanted to have sex with her.
Yeah.
But it just seems like this is why they didn't make any sense.
Yeah. Like,
not a very effective villain here.
Nah, this one, it was stuck between goofy and serious, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So...
All right.
We'll get on to the next one. Hopefully it's better.
Yeah.
I think he dresses up like a Chinaman, so we're already on a good start.
Oh, like I said, it was a different time.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be taking a little hiatus as Phil enjoys his honeymoon. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks.
That'll be fun. And in the meantime, if you have any questions, concerns, comments, complaints, you want to follow us on Twitter. We are at @3drinksinpod. That's @3drinksinpod. We are 3drinksinpodcast on Instagram, Facebook, 3drinksinpodcast@gmail.com. There's the websites. But most importantly, absolutely, is you want to go to iTunes. You want to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And you want to leave us a rating. If you want to leave us a review, too. That'd be great. You don't have to, but the rating, very much appreciated. So get on that.
Definitely.
Damn it. anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay, everybody. As always, please drink responsibly.
Yeah, take care.
And see you next time.
Yep.
He always runs while others walk. He asks. Just talk. the bone. He knows the meaning of success. His needs are more, so he gives less. And he strikes like thunderbolt. Any woman he wants, he'll get. He will break any heart. Fight goes on, and on, but he thinks that the fight is worth it all, so he strikes like thunder.